Welcome to Off the Hour. This is Sama Elibiari. Abdulrazik's situation is neither tolerable nor sustainable. Abdulrazik left Canada to visit his sick mother in Sudan, and now the Canadian government won't let him return, apparently because he represents a security threat. What this threat is, no one seems to know. So here we have a Muslim Canadian who is stuck in Sudan because the Canadian foreign minister deems him too dangerous to come back to Canada. But not too dangerous to be allowed to live, yes, live, in the Canadian embassy in Khartoum. On the line with us in Ottawa, we have his lawyer, Yaver Hamid. Mr. Hamid, welcome to our show and thank you so much for being with us.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
Mr. Hamid, could you tell us how is Mr. Abu Sufyan living in the embassy in Khartoum? Do they have a hotel there?
Not really. I mean, his hotel is the embassy. And in a sense, I guess it's akin to a hotel because he's actually paying each day that he stays there. The Government of Canada is holding him there in what's called a temporary safe haven, but it's one for which he's being charged a loan of $400 per month. So it's like his makeshift hotel, but it's certainly not by choice that he stays there.
All right. Mr. Hamid, this means a hotel. He can go out of the embassy, he can come back, he can work, he can lead a normal life.
Well, that's not the case. I guess in the sense that he chooses to seek the protection of the Canadian embassy, but there has been, since the beginning, no assurance that once he steps foot outside of the embassy that he'll ever be allowed back in. And the Canadian government has been quite careful about this, about not giving any ironclad guarantees. And there have come to some critical times when Mr. Abdulrazik's health was at risk, where we asked for more of a blanket guarantee that he could come back to the embassy, and it was always a contentious issue. So no, he does not have the right to enter and leave at will. That's something that is only at the absolute discretion of the government.
Doesn't this sound strange? Because he is a Canadian citizen. He has a Canadian passport, a passport that expired, but he's a Canadian citizen just the same. And he's held in this embassy. He can't leave the embassy. He can't come back to Canada. Do you want to shed some light about the situation, please?
You know, I wish I could really give some kind of an authoritative response, but it's as absurd as it sounds. I mean, every chapter in this story is more strange than the next. And the fact that, first of all, that he's in the Canadian embassy is a novel occurrence. There has never been a Canadian citizen in the history of consular affairs who has been housed in one of our embassies. I mean, I think there have been occasions where foreign nationals have sought asylum in the Canadian embassy, but this is a very different situation. We have our own national that's seeking asylum within our embassy, and normally in these kinds of situations, it is open to and usually it is in the interest of our government to facilitate a repatriation of any individual who's in distress back to Canada, and that's not the case here. So we never see this kind of a situation where someone is basically living in what amounts to a kind of legal limbo every day. It's a very very exceptional circumstance.
Now, I understand that today, April 28th, it marks a year that Mr. Abdulrazik is in the Canadian embassy in Khartoum, and he cannot return to Canada. You mentioned that it's in the interest of the government to repatriate him. I would add maybe the government has an obligation. Now, legally speaking, what are you advocating? I mean, what are you saying to the government to convince them that they should bring him back?
Yeah, I mean, just on the point of this being the one-year anniversary, Mr. Abdulrazak never thought, and no one ever thought who's been involved in this file, on April 28th of last year, that he would be in the embassy 1 year later. This is really astonishing to everyone concerned, and I think that the legal merit of the basis for his repatriation was so strong, or our view of that was so strong from the beginning, that we never thought that once very clearly we put it forward to the government, not simply as a stated position, but we actually put it forward in the nature of an application to the court, that the Department of Justice would get proper instructions and would bring him back. And so what we did in May of last year is we filed an application to the federal court seeking repatriation as an order under the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And as you might know, under Section 6 of the Charter, any Canadian citizen has the right to freely leave and enter Canada. The only sort of restrictions that can be placed on access and departure from Canada is for people who are non-citizens. And so in that sense, we thought it's quite straightforward. There is in fact a legal document which says that he can come back, and beyond that, there is an international list on which he finds himself, which is also not an impediment, because that list created under United Nations Resolution 1267 allows for a country to bring back its own citizen who's a listed person. So both under domestic law, under the Canadian Charter, and under international law, under United Nations Resolution 1267, he has a right to come back. So we never thought that it would come to this.
Mr. Yaver Hamid, you're the lawyer of Abu Sufyan Abdulrazak. Now, let's talk here about one or two details that our listeners may not know. Is there any charge against him by the RCMP because of he engaged in any terrorist activity, or because he had any connections with a terrorist group? Because let's bring it up in the open. So,
certainly, Sama. There's nothing. Let me deal with that in sort of two aspects. First of all, assuming that there were a charge, which there isn't, I guess that wouldn't really alter the basis of his legal claim to come back to Canada. And this is sort of a page directly taken out of the book of Brenda Martin, who was charged and indicted and convicted of
Mexico.
Of fraud in Mexico. Yeah, that's correct. And she spent time in a Mexican prison, after which, as a convicted criminal, she was permitted to be repatriated back to Canada, where she was allowed to, I believe, spend the remainder of her sentence in community back in Canada. And that's something that I think the Canadian politicians who advocated for her return are very proud of, the right of bringing a Canadian back to Canada, notwithstanding the fact that they were charged and convicted in a foreign jurisdiction. In Mr. Abdulrazak's case, there's no charge. There's no charge from any source, whether it's from our national police, the RCMP, from the Sudanese, or from any foreign government, to our knowledge, and we've looked through thousands of pages of documentation. There's no indication of any charge against him, and in fact, our RCMP and the Canadian Security Intelligence Service have explicitly said that there's no basis, there's no current and substantive basis to keep Mr. Abdulrazak on this United Nations list, which assumes that he's somehow associated with Al-Qaeda. And so he's on that list. He doesn't know why he's on that list, But what Canada is saying, what our best intelligence is saying, is that they also don't know why he's on that list. So we have that from a Canadian perspective, from a Sudanese perspective. Back in 2004, there was essentially a letter of exoneration that was put on Mr. Abdelrazzak's file, and that was given to him, saying that this man is not a threat to anybody in the world. He's not a threat to us. He's not a threat to the security of our nation. He's not a threat to the security of anyone's nation. And the letter could not be more categorical.
So now we're waiting for the government to issue him a passport, right? Because his passport lapsed. Once he gets his passport, he can come to Canada?
Well, I mean, even that is not a straightforward issue. Really, the passport is a document that it's an internationally recognized document by which a person is allowed to transit through other countries. It's an identity document, and it'll get you from point A to point B in the world. As you may recall, there was the ticket, of course, on April 3rd, that was purchased by many courageous Canadians, and all that was required for Mr. Abdelrazzak to board that flight would have been some kind of travel document. That was not furnished to him, and we were very surprised to know that his request for an emergency passport was rejected.
But and what reason did the government give you? Because so many Canadians have contributed to buy this ticket, and we remember that the government said, okay, if he can get the ticket, we'll give him the documents. So we got the ticket, and then we don't have the document?
Yeah, the request for an emergency passport was denied on the basis of Section 10.1 of what's called the Canadian Passport Order. And these are essentially the federal regulations governing Passport Canada, which indicate that a refusal may be issued where an individual is a threat to the security of Canada or another nation. And so that's what we know. We don't have any further information whatsoever to say why this is the case. Who he's a threat to, whether he's a threat to Canada, certainly that's inconsistent with the intelligence information that we have. If he's a threat to another nation, we don't know what nation that is or how he comes to be a threat. So these are all, major questions. But apart from that, I guess the thing that we don't necessarily need to emphasize is the requirement for him to have a passport. Simply, what could be done is that the Canadian government could just put him on a Canadian plane. Doesn't need a passport for that, but just bring him back, fly him straight back to Canada. And the Sudanese government since 2004 has been wanting Canada to do that. So he certainly wouldn't have any objection from the Sudanese leaving the airport in Sudan. And on the other side of things, with Canadian approbation, he would definitely be allowed back into Canada.
Mr. Yaver Hamid, just in 1 minute, what do you intend to do after that step?
We will be in the Federal Court of Canada on May 7th, and this will be the hearing of our application that we filed almost 1 year ago. That the Department of Justice of the Canadian government has been very vigorously fighting, and we hope to get a declaration that that his right to enter Canada has been violated under Section 6, and additionally to get an order requiring Mr. Harper to bring Mr. Abdelrazzak back to Canada.
Mr. Yaver Hamid, thank you so much for being with us. We were
My
talking
pleasure.
To Yaver Hamid, the lawyer of Abu Sufyan Abdelrazzak.